Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 80. The Next Generation, season 4, episode 14. Clues.
Your plan has failed. This ship must be destroyed.
No, wait. The plan failed because clues were left behind that suggested a mystery. And to many humans, a mystery is irresistible. It must be solved. The doctor's incubation experiment, Worf's wrist, Troy's hallucinations, little pieces of evidence that suggested even more clues, the clock, the transporter trace, Data's odd behavior. If we eliminate the clues and begin again.
Again?
Yes. Consider the first time a run-through, a rehearsal to shake out the flaws. The second time will succeed if we leave no clues.
You are a most unusual species, worthy of a second chance. Proceed.
It's got.
Say what now?
It's got.
Are you saying it's got Star Trek?
It's got Star Trek.
Does that mean we're jumping right in? As per our...
What do you think?
As per... we're jumping right in
let's
as...
Go, let's go for it.
As per our... That's what we do here.
That's what we do. It's podcast.
As we do it. The It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Jump right in
podcast. Jump right in. Right into the topic. The topic of interest.
Because what do I look like? A Jamoke?
Yeah, I know, right? Because, you read all the podcaster blogs, and they all say that people like it when you jump right into the topic.
They don't like all the dilly-dallying.
No dilly-dallying, no Jamokery.
Jamokery.
Jamaharan. That's a-okay. That's no problem. If you're gonna delay the main topic in order to talk about Jamaharan, then people might not be so put off by it. But the standard podcast audience gets very frustrated if you just keep talking and talking
virtual
and talking.
Virtual culinar.
And you're not like getting on, the whole, whatever the title says. They're like, I want to learn about that topic.
Yeah, because they think they're going to hear something about Star Trek, possibly the episode Clues.
Yeah, I mean, they might. One clue might be the name.
The name that it's Clues.
The name of the episode. So this is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I think we've largely covered that, made that clear for legal reasons. And it would be episode 80 of this podcast, right,
yeah.
Jesse? That's it's a nice round number.
That's a lot of content.
It's a lot of content. A fair amount of it is good content, and it's it's like a puzzle, for the listeners to root through and be.
There's a lot of stuff
that you parse out.
You find the stuff you like. You find the stuff where you're like, that's not funny at all.
Where you're just aggravated.
What the hell were those guys?
They're just
talking?
Like, oh, they talked about jack shit for the whole beginning of the podcast.
That one guy was trying to talk and they wouldn't let him finish.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Even though that guy's not here tonight. Get to that in a second. Dan will be with us in a sense, and we'll get to that in a second. So this is episode 80. We are discussing Star Trek: The Next Generation, episode titled Clues.
From season 4.
Season 4, episode 14. It is. I will just the laying it out all on the line here. This is generally, I consider, one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's in the top.
It's a go-to. I've seen it
Star Trek
more than many other episodes of both TNG and Trek in general. I also think that this episode is a great introduction for people getting into Trek. This comes up a lot where people say, well, I've got this friend, he's kind of interested, or I want to get him interested in Trek, or she's interested in Trek, or, and just hasn't gotten into it yet. What's an episode I can show them to introduce them to this world? And I think for a variety of reasons, a lot of those episodes tend to be TNG. And if it's not on your list, consider adding it to your list. It's on my list. It's right near the top of the list of episodes I would show somebody.
It's a very sort of classic science fiction kind of feel, the kind of thing that, this could be in any sort of science fiction universe, this kind of thing happening. it's not super Star Trek-y. You know, there's not a whole lot of Klingons and phasers.
Yeah,
and
you don't need to know a lot.
The Federation. It's some guys in space and something is happening to them.
It's the combination of not requiring a great deal of knowledge going into it to enjoy the episode, with a great deal of information about the characters in the show. First of all, there's no guest stars or anything on this episode. It's totally crew-centric.
Yeah.
It totally takes place on the Enterprise. And each of the main characters gets a lot of characterization in this episode in terms of you have Picard, who's into mysteries, and we get to see his Dixon Hill character, and he's curious, and he immediately seeks a peaceful compromise, right? Showing sort of the flashback, as well as what the ultimate resolution to the story. You know, Riker is a sharp-eyed, intelligent, but he's very he's loyal to Picard, and you know, doesn't push his own ideas over it. Data, of course, we'll talk more about Data's loyalty and honor and all that. Worf is strong and aggressive and often frequently ignored. but with Worf, a very good character moment is when he comes back to when he goes to Dr. Crusher and admits that he's in pain, which you know is hard for him. And again, you don't need to know the character of Worf for you to understand that as the audience, which is why I think it's a good introduction. O'Brien is just being weird and awesome.
That was just basic O'Brien stuff.
Like, Geordi's being cool. He's working through the problem, even though it may implicate his best friend.
Yeah, right.
Right? So that shows a lot about who Geordi is as a character. Of course, Crusher is big in this episode. Guinan.
Yeah, you know, I was watching this and I was like, it just sort of dawned on me that this, you only see Guinan in the beginning and you're like, wow, I always want more Guinan. But the thing about Guinan is she was just there for like these little bits.
Yeah.
She's not part of the crew. Like, she's not going to be on the bridge. She's doing her own thing. She's a civilian. She's not even an ops. Like, she's the bartender. Like,
she's in the more important part of the ship.
Yeah. Like, you see her, you know, she might serve. She might add to, she probably
she
will.
She might serve you some excellent drinks.
She might serve you something. She's often important to the story, but she's not usually ever a major character.
Yeah, occasionally she propels the plot forward.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, there's the Time Zero two-parter where she plays a more significant role also in
Star Trek
Generations. But even there in Generations, it's more of an instigating role as opposed to something more integral to the plot beyond that. But we also see Deanna Troi a fair bit and get a little bit of her character flavor. But all that being said is I really love this episode. I think it's a great way to introduce people to Trek. And for people who love Trek, it's always fun to go back to it. But despite all that, it is of course fun to discuss some of the nitpicky parts, right? There's always some stuff to nitpick in here. And to help us do that, to help jumpstart that conversation, we have a recording from Dan, who's still on undercover secret assignment, so he wasn't able to join us live this week because he is far away.
He's reaching his objective.
However, I do think that the poll of this episode, Clues, which is such a fun and an intriguing episode, was too much for, you know, he was able to come out of hiding briefly to phone us up and leave a voicemail in which he expounds upon his views of this particular episode. So we're going to play the voicemail and you might hear us chuckling along in the background. And if necessary, we might stop and comment on it. But for the moment, just enjoy Dan.
Okay. I guess this is me attempting to do some kind of podcast without the podcast.
Yeah, but you're on the podcast.
This is the podcast.
It's kind of awkward.
It's awkward for us, dude.
I'm sort of out of context here.
No.
So the episode is called Clues.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It was Stardate 44502.7.
He beat me to it.
I can see that they were.
I knew he was going to do
doing
that.
Some kind of like stuff at the beginning.
It's called
some
the teaser.
Klingon Tai Chi. There were some Crusher balls going on, which we find out is important later.
Oh, yeah.
But then there was the whole pointless Picard and Guinan hollow scene. It was just kind of drawn out. It was close to 5 minutes. And I guess it was just put there. It was just like to briefly reference the idea of putting clues together. and that kind of related it to the episode's theme, but that was really all it did. Is like also at the very title. End of the hollow scene with Picard and Guinan, he's just like putting clues together. Clues, there's clues, you gotta put them together, it's fun. And then they spent like what close to 5 minutes doing that.
Put some
that
clues
crap.
Together.
He was more close to four. Things of note, Guinan had a cigarette. Nobody has cigarettes anymore.
That's true.
And that dude said Jamoke. Not Jabroni. He said Jamoke.
She was
and
Gloria.
Anyone
from
who
Cleveland.
Thought Picard's French accent in Picard was silly? Anyone Ooh. Who thought Picard's French accent in Picard? Mm-hmm. Anyone yes. who thought Jean-Luc Picard's French accent in Star Trek Picard was silly? They should take an audio gander at this weird accent he's doing here.
Audio
some kind
gander.
Of like
I was,
New York
I'm glad he
other.
Brought that up.
Know.
I was
going to
say that.
So it wasn't the first time he sounded silly with a silly accent. Let's see later on. Oh, yeah. You could feel when Data was talking about his wormhole experiences. You could kind of feel him launching into a speech about all his wormhole experiences before it happened. And Picard had to do the classic maneuver of shutting him up.
I've had a few
Data's
wormhole
being all weird and
experiences.
Awkward. This is like season four, right? And Data's still being weird and awkward. I found it strange that they used parsecs as a measurement, once again, because it's Earth-centric. They should probably use some kind of like light years focused measurement.
Well, it's
if
just,
it's too
a, it's
too short to measure in light years, well, I'm sure they could divvy up that measurement to a smaller.
Yeah, I think that's what a parsec
unit.
Is. Dan.
You know how there's
it's a
meters
subdivision
and
of
kilometers
a,
like, and
that's what he's recommending.
Probably megameters,
megameters,
some kind of petameters,
megameters.
And, you know that kind of thing. So there was the clues Morgul in this Morgul. Episode. Well, one the first clue was Troy was feeling unfocused, although they didn't really take that as a clue.
No,
that was more
list
of a,
all the clues.
A cue to the audience. It's like, what's going on with Troy? It was sort of useful relative to her normal activity, which is just like sensing hostility in an alien ship that's arming its weapons. This time she actually was like feeling directly affected by it. Another clue, the crusher
clue
balls got pink grass, which was indicating time passage. This is much more useful
grass.
Than Troy. This was actually like sort of the basis of what they used to sort of figure out that something was miss. Diomedean scarlet moss.
Which Picard knew
another
right
clue
away.
And why didn't
was
Crusher take
when they were
that?
Misreading the planet. First it was a class M planet and then it was not. That's shady. Data was being shady with his probes. Shady probes.
Let's just send a probe.
Another clue, and Geordi was really into this one about why didn't our beards grow? He was so into that.
He was into that.
At the end of the episode,
several
when
times
he found out they were in stasis, he was like to Worf. He's like, "Hey, Worf, that's why our beards didn't grow."
Yeah,
he's really into that idea of beards growing.
But Worf was like,
was
"Why do you keep bringing that up?"
He's in a beard
Another
contest
clue was
with Worf.
Ensign Lachlan used the transporter last, and her electrolyte concentration was 12.5 deviation from previous.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about
that means. And her cellular membranes, the inner turgid pressure was off by 11.3, which was just similar enough to confirm Crusher's suspicions for some reason.
Dr. Crusher.
Another big clue is Data just straight up reset the computer clock and left behind all this evidence that he did it. I mean, you'd think he would. I mean, maybe there's just really no way to cover that up, but he sure didn't seem to try to cover his tracks.
I'm sure he did, Dan.
Another clue was when Troy becomes dizzy. That wasn't really a clue.
That was just
her getting taken over by the monster, and it was pretty messed up, man. She was like, "It was my face, but it wasn't me inside." That's a bad trip, man.
Yeah, it was.
That's no good. When
that's,
you see your face, but
don't look
it's
in the
not
mirror,
you inside.
No, it's not good.
That's some like I want to kill myself kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
That's not cool.
Stay
so
away
those
from
were basically
mirrors.
All the clues. There's some interesting points. Let's see. Oh yeah, when Picard was like telling Data to get examined by Geordi, and then Picard goes, "Will you escort Commander Data to engineering?" And then Data goes, "I know the way, sir." That was a weird exchange, right? Don't you think that was kind of a weird exchange? Like
it was.
It seems like they did that just to sort of have something to end the scene with.
Okay, I'm pausing it real quick just to comment.
There's a lot
on
of stuff to unpack in there, man.
There is, but on that particular point, yes, you're supposed. It's supposed to indicate to Data that Picard is suspicious of him, and Data was like being like, "Dude, bro, come on, I know the way. I know what you're saying. What you're saying is you're suspicious of me." That was what was intended to be conveyed in my very humble opinion.
Because it's like. Just because you're getting escorted doesn't mean you don't know the way.
Yeah, I know. Yes, Dan.
He's like the third in command. He knows the fucking ship.
And he's an android.
He's an android.
Picard knows that he knows the way.
Everybody knows the way.
He's kind of trolling Picard. I think Data's trolling Picard a few times in this episode, but that might be one of the examples.
Why would Data say, "I know the way, sir"? It seemed like almost he was being ambivalent. He was just being like, "Fuck you, man." Yeah, Data's not supposed to do that.
No, I agree with that.
It
was
kind of an odd sort of.
He was kind of being like, "Fuck you, dude. I know the way."
Like it was supposed to be significant. He's somehow, growing but tired really of wasn't
this. Data's growing
at all
tired
significant, unless I missed something. Mm. When they got the data, when they got cornered Data, and they finally got him dead to rights. When they caught him substituting a faraway planet for the one they saw, you could see it in Data's eyes. He looked like he was caught, and he wanted to beat them up.
Yeah, actually, one thing I wanted to chat about briefly was whether or not, you know, Data's always trying to be more human, and we recognize in this episode that it's very difficult for him to deal with the scenario in which he's being forced to lie. It's a conflict between the order that Captain Picard has given him, as we find out towards the end of the episode, or surmised almost immediately, that the order that Captain Picard gave him versus this whatever his normal or honest and forthright and all that jazz. So it's an interesting thing to see if enjoyment is not the right word, but we've seen Data be satisfied by certain experiences, right, including unpleasant experiences, what a normal human would call unpleasant. Data finds as intriguing because it adds sort of information to his data bank.
Right. Well,
no pun intended.
Well, Data, he says something during this episode about how he doesn't have pain receptors. Yeah. So he doesn't know what pain is. He doesn't know what the opposite of pain is, if you want to call it pleasure or feeling good, yeah, whatever, pain or pleasure.
But he does seem to get a satisfaction.
It's a different sort of satisfaction. Yeah. It's a computer's satisfaction.
It's like completing the algorithm.
Yeah, right.
It's like that algorithm is everything's been plugged in and everything's good.
That's a perfect solution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Picard says to Data later on, "Would you rather endanger Deanna, a friend and colleague, than tell me what is going on?" And then Data goes, "Which would you place first, the welfare of a single individual or that of the entire crew?" Then Picard says, "Are you saying that by not cooperating, you are actually protecting us?" And Data goes, "I am not saying that at all. I merely state a possible alternative explanation." Of course you stated saying that at all. You are saying that at all. Why did you say it if you weren't saying it?
I agree. 100%.
You're posing a possible alternative explanation? Bullshit.
I agree 100%.
That's thinly veiled, Data. Like, we could have said anything, and you said that one thing. And you're saying, like, "I'm not saying nothing. I'm just saying. It's just a possibility." It's like he totally was, like, cheating and telling him. Just illogical. I thought Picard was kind of nonchalant when that probe thing was being launched at him near the end. He's just like, "Let's see what happens when it hits the shield." Yeah, right.
I agree. Okay. True. That was one of the questions I had about Picard's actions in this episode.
Green glowy
lights.
Let's
see what happens when he punches me in the face. When Data tells Captain that they have to vary the shield shape and strength as rapidly as possible. What's the deal with Worf? He's the chief of security at this point and head of tactical. He's both. It's weird. It seems like an odd request to be able to pull off immediately, like it was no thing.
Yeah, it's computers.
Just
come
to be
on,
able to.
They did the same thing with
the
Borg.
Shape and strength.
They did the same thing
just,
with the Borg.
Like, make them go.
Weirdly, I just thought I was talking to Dan.
I know.
My brain slipped into like, I'm just responding to Dan mode.
It's like he's here and we're saying stuff while he's talking and he's doing the same things as if he was here in the room with us.
It's the miracle of recording MP3s off of voicemail. All right.
Wah, 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 wah. And Worf's like, "No problem, I'll do that. You never do that, but I can do that in a couple seconds." What a pro. Data was not very complimentary when he called the aliens xenophobes. I mean, maybe that's what they were, but he was just like, "They're xenophobes, sir." It's like, nobody likes being called that. They didn't seem to care. ZZ Alpha. ZZ Alpha. ZZ Alpha.
If I recall correctly, the ZZ Alpha was the program that Data initiated once he saw everyone passed out. The self-defense program.
Right, yeah. There's some... Oh, yeah. Data had to release ADTH compound to wake the folks up.
Yeah.
I don't know what ADTH compound is.
I think it's Ritalin or maybe Adderall.
I don't know if we're supposed to know what that is. But that was just a weird... It's weird they didn't call it some kind of fancy name. It was just some kind of abbreviation. The silliest part in this episode was Worf trying to restrain Troy at the end. Like, Troy gets taken over by that monster alien, and she stands up on the bridge, and then Worf, like, comes from behind, and he does a little silly little hop over the over, like, the railing. And then he tries to grab at her, and she just does this weird little awkward, like, sort of Aikido wrist twist, and then, like, knocks him way far back. And it's all, and the sound effects don't really match up because it's all quiet. Like, there's no real sound or matching music that really goes with it. It's just kind of, the whole thing is really awkward and weird and totally, I mean, I know Star Trek fights are always a little kind of fun and weird and silly, but that one just was completely like, I don't know. It made me laugh.
Yeah, I agree. And the vibe you get is that this was, they saved this choreography, rehearsal, and filming of this scene until late in the week or so, and late in the day, perhaps. It just seemed like everyone was kind of tired and not quite up to whatever the whatever more complicated choreography you could have come up with. But there were limitations.
I thought it was silly when Picard said, when at the end he was like telling the monster aliens, mysteries must be, he's talking about how humans have to solve mysteries. Like, we got to solve mysteries. It's part of being human. Is that really a human trait? It just seems like due diligence to me. Yeah. When things are all fucked up all around you, you want to figure out why. So you can.
That's because you're humans.
Like, it's like, makes a lot of sense both to just let it go humans. All the time, you know? Anyway.
It did seem weird that it was, this is a human trait to solve mysteries. It's a little human presumptuous. You've got a Klingon right behind you.
Yeah, that's true.
You've got an incredibly curious young android.
Yeah, totally.
Sitting in front of you. And not to mention all the other aliens that
They got other aliens on that ship.
They do, and apparently none of them are on the bridge. What does that say about the Federation? They've got Mott the Barber. He's in the barber. They got all the cetaceans in the cetacean tanks doing navigation chores.
Hell yeah.
I mean, to be fair, it might be difficult to get a cetacean officer on the bridge, but you know, you've got those little virtual doctor things. Have you seen those? They're these terrifying robots that are for virtual doctor visits where they can go around the hospital. Yeah. It's a little robot that can be go around the hospital with a remote control and has a monitor on top, and the doctor can have his face, like through Zoom or whatever, on the little robot.
Whoa.
And then the robot hoves into view as you're in the hospital. All like, oh, hey, doc, am I going to be okay? And then the doctors, invariably, the doctors are all like, you will be fine, because they have to put on the robot voice. Because it's not possible to not put on the robot voice if you're driving a robot robot around. So.
Those are dilithium burns. You shouldn't be alive.
yeah, precisely. All right.
When that alien left Deanna, when it was all peaceful, it's like, okay, let's try this out.
Why is Dan saying Deanna?
I think he always says that, doesn't he?
It's unfair of me to bring it up when he's not here to respond, but I mean, it's fine. I'm not saying it's not fine. It's fine, but Deanna?
Like, left Deanna and she all fell to the ground? Why didn't she sit Deanna back down before leaving it? Like, that's rude. You know, you just leave him standing up. You can hurt yourself falling over that.
You can hurt Deanna.
Bust your head open, break your wrist, that.
I missed
should have sat him back down. An alien wasn't very considerate.
Talking about the
maybe it's because they don't have any social skills, because they don't hang around, because they're xenophobes.
Good point.
At the end when
Picard
is really contemplating Data's warning about visiting the M-class planet at the end, he just stares at Data for a while. And it's almost like he's saying, I think you're full of shit, but I'm not going to push it. It was just a weird, super long pause. And then, of course,
extra
at the very end, the last shot, Data is doing some weird Data goober smile that is, you can't tell if that's you can't even really call that out as emotion or not, because it's a weird Data goober smile, and that's just kind of like, no, that's not emotion, that's just Data being, I don't even know
what he's trying to do there.
Nobody knows what he's trying to do there. Is he trying to be emotional? No.
He's like, I think it's going
to
work.
Is he trying
to
like express something? No, he's just got a weird Data goober smile and it's just there for some reason, and then nobody knows why. So that's kind of awkward. It's kind of awkward talking into this with nobody around, and not even imagine. Like in the context of like, I'm recording a podcast right now. It's just
We don't even know where he is.
Cut up somehow.
It's like a fragment of Bud.
It sounds like he's in a cave somewhere.
Okay, that's it.
Some sort of cave.
Okay, that's it. Oh, is that it?
That's it.
Oh, man.
That's it.
I missed that guy already.
Yeah, he'll be back soon.
Hell yeah.
He's on an extended mission.
To hell yeah.
Doing all sorts of honorable things while Jesse and I remain behind, keep the podcast going.
We're rocking this podcast.
And get out to all sorts of dishonorable stuff. Yeah. It's Dan's turn to do all the honorable things out in the wide world in order to balance out the dishonor here. We would be terrible Klingons.
It's a black hat podcast.
It is. This is a black hat, especially with Dan not here. Total black hat podcast.
It's not really.
Thank you, Dan, for leaving that somewhat cryptic random voicemail message in the middle of the night. I have no idea which time zone you're calling from, so maybe you'll regale us with all your adventures.
You bring up a lot of good things to discuss, though.
Absolutely, a lot of good points. I think one sort of thing that Dan touched on...
About the Jamoke?
That was good, too. I mean, we can talk about that. Is that an okay thing to say? It makes me uncomfortable.
Well... You know, it's like a word that you don't know what it means.
Mm-hmm. It makes me uncomfortable.
But it could just be, but it just sounds funny because there's other words that you know what they mean and you're like, well, maybe that's not, that could be in a very offensive word.
Absolutely. But there's a sense of control when you at least have a fair amount of confidence in your knowledge of the definition and the context.
True.
And so you might not want to use one of those words, but if you were, you could place it in a certain particular context. And with Jamoke,
Call somebody a Jamoke, there's going to be somebody else in the room that'd be like, that's fucking racist.
That's
dude.
Or racist or
don't you know what that means?
And I am really eager to try not to be, because you know we're white folks, so there's only so far we can go.
It's a thing you said in like the 30s or something, so it's probably not good to repeat.
That's the other thing. If it's a throwback,
might be.
And I don't have confidence in either Rick Berman or the 1980s right. and early 90s to that they would have understood that.
Exactly.
The TNG did Code of Honor, for example, and Up the Long Ladder with the Irish. Although, yeah. I saw you going back, a quick harken back to last week's episode in which we discussed Voyager's Fair Haven and Spirit Folk, two fluffy episodes that we nevertheless enjoyed. And we commented on how there were some ridiculous Irish stereotypes, but maybe not quite so ridiculous as Up the Long Ladder. I did subsequently see a Reddit thread in which a number of people claiming to be from Ireland, a lot of them were suggesting that they quite enjoyed Up the Long Ladder and didn't take offense, whereas a few others were saying, well, yeah, it's offensive. I mean, I'm not going to make a big deal about it, but yeah, it's offensive. So
there's a lot of livestock in that episode.
Yeah.
That's a little offensive.
There is a lot of livestock in that. There wasn't much in Fairhaven, was there? There's just the cow.
No, they live in a town. They're just regular people.
There was just the cow. Anyway, go listen to last week. We had a jolly good time. Jesse and I actually flew to Ireland and recorded from a pub. From O'Sullivan's Pub.
We got really wasted.
We did get really wasted, and it's a pretty ridiculous episode, particularly towards the end. So keep going.
Check it out. I think we got some stars, though, from somebody. Somebody gave us
people enjoyed that.
These guys.
People enjoy it when you get extra mentally messed up using alcohol and stuff on the internet for some reason. That's just a thing people enjoy. So whatever,
That's the world we live in.
That's the world we live in, and we've got to appreciate and understand that. But anyway, so back at the ranch,
we went off on a big old Jamoke
clues. Jamoke, yeah, Jamoke makes me uncomfortable. Unlike Dan, I'll agree with Dan that Dixon Hill scene, it did go on a little bit. The Guinan had to protest like three times. it's I don't know. I know it's the rule of three and all that, but it took a while for her to even get into Picard's office or Dixon Hill's office.
Yeah, she didn't know how to. It was interesting that she didn't know how to wear the outfit because. She was like a time traveler, mm-hmm. and we know that episode where she goes to like, it's like the 19th century mm-hmm. or something like.
But on the other hand, she was in the real 19th century, although from our meta perspective, it was the imagined 19th century.
But the clothes back then were even crazier.
They were crazier, but in the context of the show, it's a 1940s, a recreation of the 1940s, but from the perspective of mystery novels as opposed to maybe the real thing.
Right.
So maybe she was even on Earth in the 1940s. We don't know. The actual real life dresses that she was, or other clothing that she would have worn, maybe that's, I was thinking about that. I was like, that may be the reason why, because this is the fantasy version. This is the movie novel, dime novel version. Right. Of those clothes.
That's true. Yeah.
For Gloria from Cleveland.
From Cleveland.
From Cleveland. But it was, I enjoyed it. It was a fun scene. Yes.
And this is what you call fun.
It was a scene.
And that's funny.
To say the word clues over and over, and over again. The title of the episode is Clues. They mention the word clues and mystery quite a bit. It's a bit on the nose, but I am okay with it.
But the accent he does as like the Dixon Hill guy is pretty silly. Like,
yeah, it's always hilarious.
Yeah,
and they know it's hilarious.
But that's his thing.
Patrick Stewart knows it's hilarious
because Patrick Stewart is playing a guy who's not an actor.
Exactly.
And that's always that. And whenever they do acting, like Riker's a good actor, but Picard's not a good
Picard
actor.
Patrick Stewart has to do that weird thing where he fakes being, he's not faking being a shitty actor. He's faking being a moderate, somebody who has some theatricality about them, but is not a practiced actor as he is. Whereas, yeah, you're right. Riker's pretty good, even in universe. But so I enjoyed the opening scene. I enjoyed the Klingon Tai Chi. I enjoyed Crusher's balls with her little spherical things. I remember I saw this episode when it aired originally, which I forgot to write the date down, so I can't tell you what that is right now. But when it aired originally, I remember that the image of the
February 11th, 1991.
There you go. February 11th, 1991.
Days after your birthday.
I would have turned just only days before would have turned 11 years old. I can't remember if I would have had a Super Nintendo by that time. I expect I did. Probably had a Genesis and a Super Nintendo, as well as some form of, I think, a 286 computer at that stage. I'd have to double check. 286.
It was prime Super Nintendo.
Megabyte of RAM, which was considered absurd because that extra 384K above the 640 base K. What's the point of that? Most programs can't even fucking use that shit. I know. I had a 40 megabyte hard drive back then. I apologize. At this point, I'm just bragging. So let me back up and get back to Star Trek.
Nobody knows where you're talking.
I remember so well those spherical little moss holder things. For a long time, before it was easy to watch TNG episodes whenever you want, because unfortunately I did not have them all tape recorded. Some of them, but not most of them.
UPN. They were on UPN.
That was the striking image from this episode for me, is those little moss balls, particularly when they grow a little bit later.
Why didn't she do anything about those moss balls?
See, okay, here's the thing.
Didn't think about it.
No, I think this is an important point because I think there's confusion, and there's been confusion in my mind about exactly what's happened here. And so I watched this episode a few times in a row. It's not that it's complicated. It's not that complicated. It's just that they subsume some of the details in favor of maintaining the tension, which I think was the right decision. But you have to poke around in the plot a little bit and watched a couple times. I mean, that's for me. The more intelligent audience out there probably got this right away back in 1991. But my impression is that on the first go round, right, they were in more of like a hurry kind of thing. Right. And, you know, because they were made unconscious.
These guys are going to fuck us up.
Data woke them up and it was a bit more of a tense thing. And they weren't thinking the whole thing through. They were more about like, let's get this monster alien out of Deanna and off the ship and let's fly out of here in the most efficient way possible. So I think it was a mental state kind of thing. Now, you could have had some language to that effect, but probably not necessary because Picard at the end of this episode was effectively saying that in that is like, yeah, the first time through we missed some shit, right? He may have had an extra line saying like, yeah, we were fucking nervous as fuck. You're going to fucking destroy our asses. Come on, give us a break.
But he says a mystery is irresistible.
Yeah, so it's not a big deal.
He was going to die.
You can infer it, but it is, it is a little thing hanging out there. There are a couple other things, though, that I think are a little less easily explained. Okay, to back up real quick, I think not only this is one of my favorite episodes, I think it's largely a very well-written episode. One example being towards the beginning of the episode, the whole Picard voiceover is setting the stage that they have been really busy. They've been kind of overworked for a bit, and now they're on their way to another busy mission, but they've got this little bit of a respite. And it gives you this impression that they're on a time crunch and they're trying to enjoy as much time as they want. They've been kind of stressed out from being like busy, you know, finishing ahead of schedule. So they've earned a little bit of extra time. And that sets the stage for why Picard would initially agree to Data's let's not investigate thing. Right? Because you'd expect Picard under normal circumstances to be like, no, fuck the probe. We're going to go check it out anyway. We're right. Here for adventure and fun.
Yeah.
But they've set the stage.
I'm just going to go back to my room and read after this. Like, I got nothing.
That's the thing. He wants to chill out. Everybody else wants to chill out. He wants his crew to chill out. So he's basically raised the bar above the baseline for exploring strange new worlds. Right. Mm. He and that's what's happened here. And they needed to do that to make it plausible that Data could say, you know, it's the wormhole's a little bit freaky deaky and dangerous. So let's just send a probe. Picard is sort of like, yeah, fuck. Yeah, of course. Let's just send a probe. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah.
Riker, you're not wrong. But
you're Data.
Yeah. It's like we're going to do Data's thing. You're not wrong, Riker. But come on. Let's just like.
I really like Data.
Yeah. Data's cool. He's like getting us off the hook here. We can go party now. Right. So that it's a well-written episode, and that's one example of that. But there are a few behaviors that I think they were not able to entirely write themselves out of, including I was a little perplexed by Picard going back to the nebula. Like they're getting all suspicious. Mm. But when they're going back to the nebula, that's right around the time where Picard himself says, you know what? I'm starting to think Data is not lying to us, or if he's lying to us, it's in order to protect us.
Right.
And he's saying, Data's a good guy. I don't see any reason for him to have suddenly become disloyal. He's conveying to me through actual verbiage, as Dan noted in his recording, his voicemail, that he's effectively saying, like, dude, like, if you don't listen to me, the ship's going to be blown up.
Right.
Yet he still is like, well, we're going to go to the nebula and we're not going to fucking leave. And Data is standing here being all like, you got to leave. And he's like, no, that didn't entirely make sense to me. I don't know what you thought, Jesse.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And it's funny, like Picard's like, he sort of like takes it personally that Data's messing with him.
Yeah, he does take it a little personally.
And he does that a lot with like his crew, like, you know, like Picard like comes across as this sort of, you know, rather stoic kind of guy, mm-hmm. who's all about the mission and doing the duty. I mean, he's like, you know, he's a human being and he's not like a warrior kind of guy, but he's like all about the mission and doing things right. But he gets really personally connected to his crew and yeah. like, and he takes it really personally, like all this stuff when Wesley fucks up,
mm-hmm.
and it's just different.
Yeah,
he's like, listen, man, it's different from now on. You fucked up.
Like, I know. Well, it's like sort of a mentor-mentee relationship.
Except yeah, yeah.
Ideally, a mentor-mentee relationship. And it's somewhat like that with Data as well.
Yeah.
With most of his crew.
And so, like, he's really taking it personally that Data's up to something. And everybody, like, all of a sudden just kind of, like, everybody's like, you know, Data's lying. They have that meeting.
Yeah, I know.
And Data like says some stuff and they're like, hey Data, why don't you go help out so-and-so? And like and he leaves the room and they're like, have you ever known Data to like lie to us?
And by the way, as he's leaving the room, Data's giving them looks like these motherfuckers are gonna fucking talk about shit about me behind my back. Behind my android back.
And Geordi's just like, I can't believe he was doing that.
Yeah. Which as I said earlier, that's good characterization for Geordi in the yeah. sense that he is not, as much as he would like to, his preference would be to let his emotions get in the way and protect Data and all that, but he can't. His loyalty is not only to the quote unquote to the ship, it's to the science, it's to the engineering. And he's pissed off because Data, like I said, I wonder if Data in some baseline subroutine enjoyed whatever that means for Data, if he enjoyed the having to bullshit in front of all these people who he knows, and he had to know Geordi was not gonna fall for that ridiculous interpretation of a ridiculous idea, right? And of course Geordi didn't fall for it. And it's not a pride thing with Geordi. He's ruining the fact that he has to be like, dude, I can't even believe that motherfucker just said that shit.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's unusual. Data's acting unusually, but the fact that they would give Data a bit of a chance to be like, you know, this guy's Data. Like if he knows something more than us, then it's probably not nefarious. Like he's showing all these crazy signs. He's doing everything that is, you know, warranting a court-martial, a trip to the brig, you're kicked out of Starfleet, all of that stuff. But like, maybe you would think that they would be a little more like, let's wait and see what he's up to.
It could be that it would have been a little bit better. I mean, I don't know. This is just noodling things through, brainstorming style, live on a podcast. But if Data was forced to take some actions that were a little bit more difficult to defend outside of the context of I'm saving the entire ship. And I'm not immediately thinking of examples, but he falsified some records, reset the clock. He did a few things like that.
Disobeying direct orders.
He disobeyed some direct orders
that people remembered.
Right, and he disobeyed questions that were related to the mystery. He was effectively obstructing justice. Right.
Yeah.
But if he maybe was forced to do something that maybe would damage the ship or endanger someone, a crew member's life, more acutely than the Troy is being endangered. Troy's life is being endangered because her symptoms were serious. She was, you know, feeling that she was wearing a mask in the mirror, that sort of thing. Really intense, serious things, but not quite Star Trek level life in danger sort of dilemma. Where, and they've done that before with Data. They've gone in that direction where it's like, oh, Data, with his strength and everything, he could kill somebody. But you know, in the end, obviously, that's not what happens.
There are very few individuals with the strength that can break my wrist.
Yes, I know. But he was
Commander
still
Data. Commander Data is one of those individuals.
Worf doing a humble brag a couple decades before the term was invented.
That was really great.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Because it's true.
It is true.
That guy to open doors for him and shit. Like the hatches, they get closed. It's like, well, I'm going to get Data to open the door for me.
Data's a tool.
You're going to run in.
Well, the other thing to consider, of course, is that Data is an android. And as a result, if you are Picard, if you are his friends, there and given some things that have already happened prior to this episode and of course things that will happen subsequent to this episode, it does mean that he is susceptible. He is at risk, for lack of a better term, of being hacked. And it doesn't always happen exactly like that, but it is a risk. Now, I think the counter argument to that is that's similar to saying, well, somebody could be brainwashed or co-opted or bribed or something. It's no different than anybody else. It's only different in terms of the mechanism, right? So maybe you can't bribe Data with money or a plum job, but you can maybe reprogram him or disrupt his programming or turn off a subroutine, the don't eat human babies subroutine. And then like one day Data's all like, I'm sorry, Captain. I don't know. I just ate Naomi Wildman. I don't know why I did that. Must be something goofy with my subroutines. And then that's a whole philosophical question of, can you even blame a guy?
I don't even need to eat and I ate her.
Yeah. all I did was rend her flesh.
The proper thing to say
ground
is
and
that
rend
it was
her,
good
rended
for
her
me.
Flesh. Rendered her flesh and expelled it, turned it into sausages. But all that, nevertheless, and
because what is it? There was that episode. He was like, and they were like, is it good to eat? And he was like, the proper thing is to say that it is good for me.
It is good for you. Yeah, he likes the combination of lipids and oils and all sorts of stuff like that. Yeah, but you know, is it even his fault if he becomes reprogrammed, and that's a that, that's a fun conversation to have that is only tangentially related to real life, but you never know. Oh, the one thing I really wanted to mention was the crewman. I forget her name now. You might remember that ensign. Ensign Lachlan, right? She was the last
Dan,
one.
Dan named her.
Yeah, she was the last one to use the transporter. And I'd like to hear that story. I want to have a whole episode that's just about Ensign Lachlan's last
mission.
What was she doing? Not that they indicated she was doing anything special, but she transported to someplace.
Did she go?
Was she transporting to somewhere in the ship? Probably not. So she probably transported.
It must have been wherever they were the last.
Yeah, you know? To another ship or to the previous whatever. Maybe it's not uninteresting at all. But because you know,
they were out in space at a T-Tari class star.
All the way out of the T-Tari, and then they called it the T-Tari system, which slightly annoyed me because it's like, this is not the T-Tari system. It's a system within the T-Tari type star. Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
So, Ensign Lachlan, Dr. Crusher goes, talks to O'Brien, determines that Ensign Lachlan was the last one to use the transporter. All right. So, Dr. Crusher calls Ensign Lachlan into sick bay. And Ensign Lachlan's sitting on the sickbay bed with Nurse Ogawa and Dr. Crusher, and they do the scans. And then Dr. Crusher's getting all excited. She's like, oh, 12% off. Man. Oh, 11.5. Oh, that's so good. Oh, my God. And she's all like, all right, Ensign Lachlan, you can go. And I'm thinking, if I'm Ensign Lachlan, I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
She's like, exactly as I expected.
It's 12%? It's a 12 fucking percent off baseline? Is that good? Is that bad? Like, what does that mean?
She didn't even explain that to Ensign Lachlan.
And she could have, and it would have been useful for her to explain to Ensign Lachlan. I know that we get the context. We can get the message that this confirms in some way, those numbers confirm to Dr. Crusher that Ensign Lachlan has, there's 24 hours that are unaccounted for in terms of biological adjustment and growth and all that other thing. Okay.
Ensign Lachlan's going to have to take a trip to like Commander Troy.
I agree. And meanwhile, Troy is going to be like, Troy won't be able to handle it.
She's not.
Troy's like, I'm sorry, right I now. Can't see you today because I've had a fucked up week.
I was looking in the mirror and it wasn't me.
It was as if I was on a bunch of shrooms and I looked in the mirror and I saw a wolf face.
It wasn't me.
I don't need to be dealing with that.
Don't look in the mirror.
Don't look in the
kids
mirror.
Kids at home.
So yeah, I felt real bad for Ensign Lachlan, and she was all smiling. I kind of wish they had had the actor playing Ensign Lachlan, if they had had her give a quizzical look when she was dismissed to be like, are you gonna like tell me what the
deal
is?
I know, right?
Is everything fine? Do I have cancer? Do I have some horrible disease? What's going on here?
I don't think they have cancer in the future.
They got to have something.
But it would be scary if you did.
Yeah.
It'd be like, holy shit, I have fucking cancer.
That might be the deal.
What was I doing?
That might be the deal.
There's no SIGs.
Anyway. I know we're not quite in odds and ends territory yet soon, but I didn't like when Deanna was possessed and she, in the flashback, and she saw like, it will take one of your days. she didn't even say like one Earth day. They knew that would be really ridiculous, but it almost made it more ridiculous to have one of your days.
The most ridiculous thing is it's a class M planet and it probably has the same length of day as everybody else. So it was like,
maybe,
they could have said like one of our days.
It's something I wish they would discuss more in Star Trek, because the presumably all these different planets should be different sizes and masses and orbits. Their years should be different and their days should be different. They make a reference on Deep Space Nine. Deep Space Nine operates on a 26-hour day, which I can't recall if they ever explicitly state whether that's because that's the Cardassian day or the Bajoran day. I don't remember.
Yeah.
You can write in and set us straight. Write into feedback@itsgotstartrek.com with the subject line, set us straight, colon, and a description of your topic, and then in the body of the email you may write your argument. Please provide citations and other forms of evidence. Audio recordings, video clips supporting your argument are welcome and encouraged.
But you would think that it would be somewhere between, you know, somewhere around 24 hours if it's
your standard sort of planet that's habitable. I mean, that just has to do with the rotation.
You'd think that in Star Trek terms, in more realistic terms, not necessarily.
I mean, not necessarily.
So it all comes down to, it's all the complex dance of the planets.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Because planets tend to have, at least from what I've read, and I've only read sort of a science fictional kind of thing, but there's a habitable ring, a zone where a planet exist where in relation to the distance from its star,
but
where you can have habitable life happen.
But there's
anything to do with how long the day is.
What it does tangentially, it does, but there are a lot of variables. For example, a tidally locked planet, one that did not rotate on its axis at all.
Right.
Would have one side facing the star and one side not facing the star.
That's a different day situation.
So that would have a different zone. It would want to be presumably further out from the star, but one side would be habitable, the other side not.
Yeah.
It might have some like crazy ass winds because of the temperature difference. So it might have like constant tornadoes or something like that. And orbiting, if it's orbiting too fast, that might cause problems, but it doesn't necessarily mean they couldn't have... life of some sort, even advanced life. I haven't looked too much into like a super fast orbiting. Maybe you just get sick a lot. Everyone just gets nauseous when they go there. They're just like, Jesus, this is just ridiculous. Get me off this ride. Am I right?
You get like pushed up against the wall.
Yeah, if you go into you go into a house, you're just being flung up against the ceiling. They should talk about that more in Star Trek. And they do. It's not that they don't. It's just it usually is not one of the core bits of the plot. It's one thing I do really enjoy about The Expanse is how much the mass and orbital location.
It's a lot of physics.
All that stuff matters not only to the plot in a most general sense, but it matters to the cultures of the people and it's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm fine with Star Trek not going into that level of detail, but they occasionally go to a planet that's it's a heavy planet or it's a volcano planet or something. They could do a little bit. They could at this stage in Star Trek, I think they could expand out a little bit more than they have.
We should do a mini series podcast on The Expanse.
We should go. It's got the Expanse.
It's got it.
After it's got fried green tomatoes. It's got
we'll do that one too.
The Expanse, fried green tomatoes. Don't you think that? And again, all of this is pure nitpicking because we have stated up front, we love this episode, it's great, but wouldn't the plot have been more easily resolved if Picard had ordered the first time through, if Picard had ordered Data instead of saying like, you can never say anything ever again forever, if he instead said like, you can't tell anything to us, but if it's fucking clear that we're going to go back to the planet, it's fine, you can explain everything to us. It's an if-then statement,
right?
It's an if. This is pretty basic programming.
Like, yeah, like if you just tell us that we don't have to, all we have to do is just not talk about these people. Like,
and by the way, Data he's not only third in command, second officer for the Federation flagship, fucking Enterprise
chief of operations.
He knows what the fuck he's doing. He is a Starfleet Academy officer with a great deal of experience. He is no joke.
He can open doors.
Data is no joke.
He can break Worf's wrist.
Do you know what you can do to him? You don't have to give him, he's not actually, like everyone's like, oh, he's a robot. Yeah, I know he's an android, but you don't have to treat him like a fucking, it's not a genie where it's a trick question where you have to give him this narrow set of orders. You know what Picard could have done? Picard could have said, Data, I order you to help them erase our memories, get this sorted out. And then beyond that, you do whatever you think makes sense because you're a fucking officer. You're a Starfleet officer. Use your fucking discretion to figure out what to do. Because
he says something about like, I don't know if this will fit into your programming. It's like, it doesn't have anything to do with his programming.
Picard is fucking racist.
He's an officer and he's going to do what he's ordered to do just like anybody else.
He's being racist to androids.
Exactly.
I know there's only one
his Pulaski moment.
It was a Pulaski moment. It's your programming. You people and your programming. I don't know if you people can handle this shit, you android.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
He's a thing. What is this thing?
Maybe next time, trust your officers more, and you can give them a more a broad mission statement that they can then use their own executive discretion in order to develop a strategy and a manner of implementation of that strategy that will be appropriate for the overall mission of not getting everyone fucking killed, as opposed to this whole dance where it's like, well, I'm not saying I said that. I might have said it, but I'm not saying I said that. Anyway. I think I've covered most of the main bits.
I think so.
I have a few odds and ends here. I think it's fucked up that we never get to hear the resolution to the Dixon Hill story from the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, right. Who shot that guy?
Yeah, because Picard makes it so. I know Guinan is not fully convinced by the end of the conversation, but I'm convinced when Picard is like, who is this man? Where is the money?
Yeah.
Who shot him? And why? I want to know all those things. So we need an episode about Ensign Lachlan's last mission. And not last mission, previous mission. I hope it's not our last mission.
Ensign Lachlan's ultimate mission.
What happens at the end of that Dixon Hill story with Dixon Hill and Gloria,
who shot that Jamoke?
Gloria from Cleveland. And what happens to
the case of the dead Jamoke?
Oh, by the way, that dead Jamoke. I don't nitpick on this stuff often with actors where he's playing dead. He totally moves his eyes. And okay, I can't imagine how hard it is to do that. It normally doesn't break the reality for me. In this case, he straight up just looks at Picard. He's dead on the floor, and then Picard starts to move his head, and the guy's all like, whoa. He's all like, oh, that's Patrick Stewart. He was in Dune. Look at that guy.
He was in Excalibur.
That dude looks the same as he did 10 years ago, and he's going to look the same 30 or 40 years in the future.
Until 1 year, and he's going to look like he's a million years old.
Yeah.
Just so kidding.
Is when Data calls Picard during the Dixon Hill program, and Data is all like,
I know, it's
I thought it would be less obtrusive if I patched it in through the old style phone.
Data likes the holodeck.
He does.
He's had a blast on the holodeck.
I really want to know is what I know most people are going to say he was sincere. Okay, I agree. He probably was sincere about it. But I got a bit of a vibe that Data was fucking trolling Picard right there. And he was like, yeah, you like fucking your playtime stories. I've got there's some serious shit going on out here, and you want to play your playtime stories? We're going to call you on your goofy ass old ass phone.
I'm going to call you up, motherfucker.
Back when phones were real phones, not like today when we don't even use them as fucking phones.
Operator, give me Dixon Hill.
Operator, I need 55 Klondike 586 Klondike 88673. Charlie, who is that? This is a party line. We all got to share this line. That's what people used to do. Phone lines, you just picked up the phone and everyone's on the phone at the same time.
Where was it? It was supposed to be in San Francisco, right?
Presumably Dixon, in San Francisco. Yeah, most of that.
It would have like a San Francisco, some sort of geographical San Francisco name. And yeah. Like 65,000.
LA and San Francisco are the primary spots for film noir.
Yeah.
Sort of depends on which direction you want to go with it. Yeah. Dixon Hill. Like
Chinatown.
Gloria from Cleveland. From Cleveland. I liked how Riker says almost a day's travel in 30 seconds after they go through the wormhole. And I think as I mentioned, I've watched this episode, I don't know how many times, but many times, many, 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 many times over the years. And I think this is the first time I noticed him saying almost a day's travel in 30 seconds. And they did travel. It would have taken them almost a day to travel non-wormhole style. So
it's obvious.
It says
something about like, I would have expected us to come like wake up in next week. And then Data turns around immediately. It's like, that was never a possibility.
Are you crazy?
Everything's okay.
It was a narrow diameter wormhole.
It wasn't going to take into next week. No.
It wasn't going to take that long. Did you see the diameter of that wormhole? Are you crazy? You don't know about wormhole dynamics, Einstein-Rosen bridges? You don't know about that? Jesus.
He's just command. He's not ops.
All right. So this is one of the rare times. I'm trying to remember another example, but Worf does not recommend weapons. Right? In that flashback, he's like, at this range, I don't recommend weapons. He says, basically, it's too short range for weapons. And I'm trying to remember another example of Worf. Now, you can write us in. This wouldn't be setting us straight because we're not getting something wrong. You could just fill us in. This is a new segment called Fill Us In.
Do you know more than us? Probably.
Write into feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Subject line, fill us in. Fill you in. The segment is called Fill Us In.
Fill our
but
hole.
But when you write the subject line, it should say Fill You In. I hope that's not too complicated. And don't be cute and spell Phil like the name Phil, like when, Uncle Phil.
P-H-I.
No, just you fill, just subject line, Fill You In, colon, I've got a fact for you. Or I can add nuance to a point you made. I mean, you
can spell fact with a P-H if you I don't know why you would do that. But
is that like a really? I'm just so tickled by that. It's like a really awesome groovy fact.
I know, right?
Fact. It's like a fact. That man.
Is, that's a fact, man.
All right. Well, if that hasn't been coined already, we're putting our chip down on that. And our chip is being placed. I'm placing it right now on Jesse gets credit for the term fact with a PH.
And the chip is spelled with a TC.
and it's like a Tzatziki chip. So we've putting the chip down on fact, and then we've have a yet a new segment called fuck you, you're wrong. no, fill us in. That's the previous segment. This is we put a chip on that. The email us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. Your chip is invalid.com, and then you tell us why we're wrong, or show us evidence that somebody else has coined that term fact with a PH. All right, back to the Star Trek. I think that those were pretty much my main odds and ends about this episode. Sometimes it's difficult, you know, because it's a fun episode. It's charming. It's classic. Great introduction. Great repeat viewing for, you know, it's the all around. It gives you everything that you fucking need, right? In Star Trek, it's hard to get better than this. Again, yeah. New person, easy entry. None of this crazy wiggle wobbling.
You got Geordi, you got Data, you got Worf.
You got all your people there. Everyone's all comfy.
There's no Wesley, but who cares?
You old school, awesome repeat Star Trek viewer. Well, this is cozy. This is cozy and comfortable.
It is a cozy.
It's not going to get you involved in any long story arcs. You know, I know how that is. Sometimes you're like, I want to watch Star Trek, but if I watch this episode, then I'm going to want to watch that episode, and then this, that, the other thing. This is a one and done, in and out.
And you're the audience is along with the crew for the ride as they're discovering the clues.
Cruising along.
It's not where you're like
flying through space.
Like sometimes you're watching mysteries and you know what's happening, but the people on the mystery don't know what's happening. So that part of the fun is them figuring it out. But like, this is all like if this is your first viewing, then you're along with the crew.
It'd be funny if they did this episode in the Columbo style where you know what happened the whole time. And it's all like, how is Columbo Picard going to figure it out?
I know. It's like, it's another thing.
He's like, one more thing, it's Data. One more thing. And he could do his funny voice. He could do his funny American voice. one more thing. One more thing. One more thing. Ridiculous. Okay. So, if that does it, you done with all your odds and ends?
I have one thing, interesting Ooh. Bit that I was reading about. Ooh, that
one more thing.
There are uncanny similarities to a Red Dwarf episode that from a couple of years prior to when this aired, and it's called Thanks for the Memory.
I recall it reading about that.
Yeah,
actually.
It was
seen the Red Dwarf episode.
The producer, I'm not sure if I've seen it or not, because I know I've seen some Red Dwarf, but it's been a very long time, so I don't remember it kind of all runs together for me. The producers of the show put out a book at some point where they talked about it, you know, different. It was called like The Guide to Red Dwarf or something. That might not be the title, so, you know, shame on me. But there's the episode called Thanks for the Memory, and it has something to do with like there's an android in Red Dwarf. I think his name is Crichton.
Yes, Crichton.
UK listener. And he wasn't set us straight on that one.
I think he started in the, I want to say second season, yeah, late he, in the first season. He wasn't an original character.
Yeah. It was just like the cat guy and the annoying guy and the Jamaican guy.
Do you think Jamoke is about Jamaican? I hope it's not.
I hope not.
I love Jamaicans. I mean, I love everybody, but I certainly don't
want to. But I thought that was kind of funny.
Jamaican.
It's probably purely coincidental. But.
I don't know enough about that. I recall I learned about that on a Reddit thread where that discussion was going on, and it was one of those debates where both sides were being fairly convincing, the side saying that it seems fairly obvious that it was ripped off, and then the other side saying, actually, when you look at both episodes, there are quite significant differences beyond some basic plot mechanics. Like I said, I cannot vouch for either position, and we encourage you to go do your research in this new segment on the It's Got Star Trek podcast called Go Do Your Research, in which case you don't got to email us shit. You can just go do your research.
Go to your research and tell me like how I can watch Red Dwarf in the USA, because it used to be on Netflix and now it's gone. But they got it on like... I think they have it on British Netflix. When I was in Britain, I was like,
British Netflix.
I might be wrong, but I think they were on there.
We've got the Yankee Netflix.
Yeah. And it's got no Red Dwarf. It's got, you know, it's got Broadchurch.
Broadchurch is good.
It's a really good, it's fucked up.
It's really fucked up. I mean, it's really
messed
fucked up.
That's a messed up town, man.
It is. It is a messed up town with those fucking...
They should do a musical. They should do Broadchurch musical.
like an upbeat musical a la Cats, except about a child molested and being molested and murdered.
Oh no,
pretty intense. All right, well, on that fun note, I guess we'll close down the podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't, you know where to reach us. I'm not going to give you the email at this stage because
we don't
encourage nonsense, but you've heard it enough. You can reach us on a lot of different places and social media. It's pretty much at It's Got Star Trek, wherever you're going to go on social media, wherever we're at anyway.
Apple Podcasts.
If we're not someplace where you'd like us to be, in terms of social media, if you want us on LinkedIn,
iTunes,
we'll do it. You want us on TikTok, we'll give it a try. But in the meantime, we are on Facebook. Some of you will be familiar with that webpage, as well as Twitter and Instagram. Those are the main places you can get us. We'd very much enjoy seeing you there, interacting with us, along with the legions of other fans that are out there.
Set us straight. Fill us in.
You can set us straight. You can fill us in. You can do your research.
Where do you get off? any of those are applicable.
Yeah, any of those things. You can send us messages. Dan will be back with us quite soon. He's just still on assignment for a little while longer, but hopefully maybe we'll get some more input from him, and we appreciate him being able to leave that voicemail message from whichever weird creepy cave
that was pretty cool
cave under the sea that he's hiding
it was in. Like he was here, he was doing all the stuff, he was like saying stuff,
and we were able to talk over him.
We could talk over him. He was saying stuff and like getting messed up and like retelling it, re-speaking it again. He was like, I'm going to say that again how I wanted it to say it.
And for next week, I think we're due for a Deep Space Nine. It's been a while since
Space Nine. Absolutely. That's what's remains.
Would you be cool with doing Move Along Home?
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about that.
I mean, I love that episode. It is. I understand why it's low on the people's list.
Ala Moraine.
The third chap and all that. We'll discuss the good and the bad of Move Along Home from Deep Space Nine next week. In the meantime, from myself, Patrick, that's me talking. I don't know how to, it's an awkward construction for me to convey my name. My name is Patrick. That's my name.
There's a problem with the English language.
And then this guy over there, that's Jesse.
My name is Jesse.
Dan, we already talked about. He's off in a cave.
My name is Dan, and I'm in a cave, and I'm slowly saving the world. One dead enemy at a time, or whatever it is he's doing. We're not entirely clear, but
it's a secret.
It is a secret. So, but from all of us
on the way to work
at the It's Got Star Trek podcast, we wish you a very Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And whatever time of year it might be. This is an evergreen show. You can listen to this anytime.
It's almost the solstice, and that used to be kind of a
change of year.
It's kind of a new situation. New year. Yeah,
it's sort of a pagan kind of calendar situation.
Whatever it is you're doing out there and whatever time frame in the future, probably not the past, but if you're listening in the future, I mean, everyone's listening in the future. I mean, if we're going to be.
Sometimes I listen in the past.
See, you got to tell me how you did that because that doesn't make any sense physics-wise. But
it hurts my head.
So we do wish everyone a hearty and wonderful week. And in the meantime, we will gather our things over the course of the next week, gather our thoughts together on Move Along Home, Deep Space Nine, and we will be back here next week to discuss that particular episode with jocularity, humor, and the occasional insight. How does that sound, Jesse? Does that sound good?
That sounds excellent, sir.
All right, good. So with that,
we'll meet again
on the other side. Good night.
Sorry, Dix. There's a lady here to see you. Says her name is...
Gloria. From Cleveland.
Okay. He never heard of you.